The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Time. It's Friday, and we get to spend the first hour tonight with John Barber instead of the third, because I'd just as soon do 3 hours with John. Everything is always so smooth and so much fun with John. A hot knife through butter. Hello, Johnny. What's going on down in Las Vegas?
Well, there's a lot going on down in Las Vegas, not surprisingly. And I got to tell you, first of all, how much I enjoy being with you once a month, but especially tonight with one of my biggest, dearest fans and one of the greatest writers. And she's put together the absolute definitive book on movie critics. It's her book called The Greatest Reviews I Ever Read, and it's about my 10 years as a film critic. But you asked me what's Carol Honig's her name. And it's the only nonfiction book she's ever done. And she just published her sixth novel just right now, today, which has a fantastic title, which we'll tell you about. But as for Vegas, I guess a few things are going on. First of all, if you're relating it to film, Robert Kennedy Jr. is coming to town.
And
a friend of mine who is very prominent in the sports world, I don't want to mention his name in case they bar him. And what I'm saying is this, is that if you pay around $2,000 or $3,000, you will go to a billionaire's house where Bobby is speaking and you are allowed 30 seconds to ask a question.
That's the venue, a private residence of sorts?
Yeah, it's a private residence, a billionaire who is supporting Bobby Jr. And my friend, as I said, is one of the most prominent sports figures in the world, and few people know who he is. He is also one of my biggest fans. He has reread the book that Carol edited for me, my autobiography, Your Mother's Not a Virgin. He's read it three times, and he said, he carries it with him all around the world where he's involved with his sports activities. And he says because he gets to read it on the plane again. And sometimes when he comes to Vegas, it takes an hour to get off the plane and he has another read. So anyway, he told his wife, do you mind if I put up a couple of $1,000 and go see Bobby while I'm in town? We're in town at the same place. So he called me today, and he said, would you come over to the MGM and have lunch with me and bring your movie? And I said, which one? He said, The American Media and the Second Assassination, President John Kennedy. And I said, why? He said, well, my wife's given me permission to spend this kind of money because I want to go and confront Bobby Jr. And I said, why would you confront him? Well, he said, well, not exactly, but he's never mentioned Jim Garrison. And you cannot talk about the murder of John Kennedy unless you're talking about Jim Garrison. He said, they got this crap out there with Rob Reiner. And how on earth can he'd get like 10 hours of television time and 10 hours of internet time and not mention Jim Garrison. And how can you not mention John Barber if you're not mentioning Jim Garrison? So I want you to bring me a copy of your film, because that's what I'm going to hold up in front of this crowd and tell Bobby Jr. if he isn't doing something after looking at this film, then he's not really doing anything. Wow, that's pretty tough. Okay, now, the other thought about movies, because I want to get to Carol right away because she's such a gem, is Donald Trump is coming to town. He'll be singing My Kind of Town.
Now he's coming to your house, right? And you're going to invite people over to help raise money for him?
Well, the thing is, he may, you know, when he sings My Kind of Town, he likes this town because this town only cares about money. It's just a cash town.
It does fit.
It's a
spiritually, it's a perfect match for the Donald.
Oh, my God, it is. But he's out of money after that ruling today by the jury that he's going to pay like $83 million for raping a woman after 4 years of screwing the country. But it is. I thought,
that's good.
If they ever made a movie about Donald Trump, it would be called Dumb and Dumber. And the reason for this is last week he was urging his lawyers to go to the courts and have them rule that any president in office should be forgiven any crimes committed while in office. And they said, no, Mr. Trump, that's unconstitutional. He says, I'm paying you. You go in there, you do that. And he said, we're going to look like fools. It's totally unconstitutional. Well, it didn't take the judge a minute to say, are you people idiots? It's totally unconstitutional. Now, that makes the lawyers dumb. But what makes Trump dumber is he is admitting that he committed crimes while he was the president of the United States.
That's true.
So, crazy. You know, in 1936, Robert Sherwood wrote a play exactly about a man like Donald Trump, and it was called Idiot's Delight.
Perfect.
So, anyway,
I'm with you on that.
My delight is to be with you again, and I hate to say this, but more so with Carol as a co-guest on the show, because I just love her and I love her work. I wouldn't have my fantastic autobiography without her. And this, her other book, The Greatest Reviews I Ever Read, should be in every school in America, high and low, in every drama class, in every English class, in every film class, in every writing class. It is just a work of complete, total art about this business, the business of making films, and especially the business of reviewing films. And she does it in only 231 pages.
Well, that's quite a compliment, and I think it's an adequate description. We'll have a link to the book. It's on Amazon, of course, if you want to go check it out now. Nice cover. Nice book. I haven't read it, but if John says what he's just said, it's a must read. I can't even imagine how. I want to say this. For nearly 10 years, John did reviews on movies. This is true. Now, I was going to the University of California, Santa Barbara at the time, all the way through grad school. And I took my time. I had fun. You retire when you're young, John. You don't wait. Anyhow, all those reviews, we would wait up and look forward to your appearance, especially on KNBC, with these reviews. And I would listen, and I would be in awe of your linguistics, your language, your writing, your descriptive abilities about these often crazy movies. And you did I know why she did the book. She got it. You got it. When you got it, you were hooked on Barber, and that was it. And I went through college with you doing your reviews. And I want to thank you, because it was really fun. It was a highlight of the week.
The other day it was at the golf course, and some guy walked over to me who I didn't even know, And he said, oh, my God, I got to thank you. I said, for what? He said, my wife and I spent the weekend laughing our asses off, reading one another reviews from your book. And then another friend of mine, his mother's having her 88th birthday back in New York. He got the book. He got on the plane and he howled all the way to New York. And people, when they could get out of their seats, came over and wanted to know, what are you reading? What are you reading?
So, oh, that's funny. What a compliment.
And then the
laughing
other
out loud. Too funny.
Yeah, but the genius of Carol is the way she crafted the writing of the book, because, well, I'll let her tell that herself. So get a hold
Fine.
Of my.
Let's bring Carol Honig on. Are you there, Carol? Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
We're good. We're
good. Good. I just have to correct a couple things John said. It's not the first nonfiction book that I've written. I wrote years ago The Author's Guide to Planning Book Events, and then I've had some essays put in. Ariana Huffington invited me to put an essay in one of her books. I wrote an essay called Wild Horses and Young Stallions about my grandfather, and I wrote an essay with Tori Johnson for her book, Will Work From Home. And the new book that's coming out, it won't come out until September 10th. And so other than that, John, I loved everything you were saying.
Well, the new book, though, Angel, isn't it? It's Before She Became Mrs. Something or Other. What a great title.
No, Before She Was a Finley. And that's a prequel to my novel, Without Grace, because Grace was a woman and in Without Grace. And it took about 20 years to figure out why Grace had left the family. So now that will be coming out in September. And it's called Before She Was a Finley.
Well, I'm so thrilled to be spending this time with you and with Jeff. So why don't you tell Jeff how come you wanted to or got interested in writing a book about book reviews?
Yeah, let me ask you this, Carol.
Because I love you, John.
Carol,
got to read. Yes. Yeah.
Quick question. When did you, do you remember when you first, were you listening to John when he was live, back in time and space, doing these things on KNBC in L.A.? Did you see him on a rerun basis? When did you first see him doing his reviews? Do you remember?
I don't remember seeing him actually doing the reviews. I did see him on Real People. And I knew about his reviews. And when when I was doing his editing for Your Mother's Not a Virgin, I knew that he was a reviewer. And I knew that I would have enjoyed his reviews. And even though the movie had been out for so long, I think I told John several times, I am reading these reviews and I am howling and they are just hysterical and so on point. And I ended up telling different people, you got to hear about this. This is just too funny, because he didn't hold back. He was very honest.
No, I'm telling you, you did him once a week, John, sometimes.
Bill, I know. I did him every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and
three
I got
times.
100. Yeah, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I got $150 for Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I was responsible for 10% of the viewership of the 6 o'clock news, and I was only making $24,000 a year, and yet Kelly Lang, the weather girl, was getting $100,000 a year, and she was only responsible for 9% of the viewers. But anyway, Carol, tell them how you met me, which is to me a great surprise and a great gift.
Was that when I went to the see you for the the documentary?
Yes.
Was that? In the city, in Manhattan.
And, Jeff, to see the American media in the second assassination of John Kennedy. And that's And I didn't know that she had any interest in that. And I was absolutely stunned to meet her. And she's very, very attractive and ultra smart.
Oh, as you know.
So I was really complimented. So that's how she met. And then when she was editing Your Mother's Not a Virgin, there was, of course, a number of chapters in there about when I was a film critic. And that's when when it started.
Yeah. Well, Carol, we honestly would come back from, you know, classes, university, whatever's, and we would gear our week around listening to John present these incredible, beautifully written, articulate, Shakespearean mm-hmm. quality reviews. And you know now, I didn't know you edited Your Mother's Not a Virgin. That's wonderful. I didn't know this until just now. But great job.
Okay.
Superb
and
job.
The other thing, Jeff, is the two brilliant things she did with the greatest reviews I ever read. First of all, she did an extensive 2 or 3 hour interview of me. And the uh-huh. other thing is, because of her background and childhood and her early religious upbringing, she was, I think, an avid moviegoer. And what she did is she would relate her life and that time of her life at the same time that I was reviewing something relevant to her life. Is that correct?
Yep. Carol? No, absolutely. And I opened the book with a memory of the very first movie I remember my parents taking me to, and it was a drive-in movie, and it was Lilies of the Field with Sidney Poitier. And mm-hmm. and of course, John, you know, reviewed that movie. So, and then I told my story, and then I shared his review. And that's one thing I asked John, like, do you still have these reviews? And he sent me such a delicious stack of reviews that it was so hard to cherry pick which ones am I going to put in the book. And we might be able to do a second edition. I don't know, John. But, I mean, there were just so many just fascinating stories in his reviews and so spot on. And now when I see these movies on Turner Classic Movies, I'm like, oh, yeah, John reviewed this movie. And I remember writing about it. So it's such a treat to even know John. And just like you said, Jeff, he's such a wit. I mean, he's sharp as anything. I just love his tone of voice and just the wit that he has.
Oh, it's magic. I've said many times, his humor comes from his soul.
Yep.
And I'm not mm-hmm. overstating it. It just pours out of him.
Well, Carol was a highly educated woman. And one of the first things, if I were to ask Carol this, and I'll ask her now, she wanted to know, if I word this right, what qualified you to be a critic? Is that right?
Yeah.
You asked me that?
Yeah, we did write. I did write some questions to John that led into the book, and I did ask him that.
Now, were you surprised at all when it turned out that I became quite a successful critic, having been a dropout of school at 15 and never gone to college without training or anything like that? Because I sort of got that impression from reading it.
Right. Well, I, you know, because of, you know, Your Mother's Not a Virgin, I knew you quite well. So I knew your history. I knew your story. So the fact that you came out of that and here you are, sharing your critiques on these movies that were so spot on and they were so honest, and you weren't whitewashing anything. You were just saying how you saw these movies. I think people appreciated what you had to say. They knew whether or not they wanted to see the movie after reading what you were saying about it.
You know, I would submit, Carol, that another measure of John's genius at writing these things is, even if you didn't agree with what he said about a movie,
mm-hmm.
you loved to listen to the reviews.
Absolutely. Yep.
And you know the wonderful thing about some of the great talents that I bashed, they so enjoyed the bashing that they became some of my best friends.
That's the point.
Yeah.
It's not what you do, it's how you did it. And
yeah, and I recall that she asked me, you know, why I became a reviewer, and it's the same reason I became successful or got into anything else I did. It was all by accident. It was sort of survival, because if I stopped trying to get ahead, I could not fall back to the horrible life that I had in Canada. So I just kept going, and I just kept going. And I got into television because I loved Jack Paar. And it was the first time I ever saw people talking to one another. But he opened his show with a comedy monologue. And I thought, well, gosh, I would love to have a talk show. So I taught myself how to be a comic and became very successful at it. But what I loved is entertainers like Jonathan Winters and Lenny Bruce. And Lenny Bruce and Jonathan Winters spent half of the acts just spoofing movies. And so I started to do the same thing as a stand-up comic. I would write jokes about movies, and people loved them. I'd go and when I ended up on the AM show again by accident in 1970, and we were live, I told the general manager, John McMahon, who wore $600 empty suits, he said, I told him I wanted to do reviews because we live in the heart of Hollywood. He said, you're not doing reviews. That's just intellectual crap. Television is the only thing that matters. And so I went ahead and did them anyway because we were live and he couldn't stop me. But I wasn't getting paid for it. And the other thing,
I love live radio, John, for the same reason. Do what you want to do. No one's going to flag you. And I want to also, if I might, just jump in. Don't lose your train of thought. Thank you for mentioning Jonathan Winters. He's becoming, unfortunately, kind of a semi-forgotten genius. That man was astounding in his wit and his observations. And I had the great pleasure of spending time with him. He lived in Santa Barbara and passed away there eventually. But he would talk to me about his views on Hollywood in the golden days when he was first in movies and what had happened to Hollywood and all the sitcoms and TV movies. And he despised what happened to Hollywood. He did. I can tell you that straight away. And I've got five of his original paintings. He was an artist, too.
Oh, my God, how wonderful.
Oh, yeah, very lucky.
Jeff, if anybody wants to see what a genius that man was and what a genius Jack Paar was for having him on all the time, you Google, YouTube, Jack Paar gives Jonathan Winters a stick, just an ordinary stick, and in 8 minutes, he does stuff with that stick that is beyond brilliant.
I agree. I've seen it.
Hilarious.
It's astounding. It's truly astounding what he did.
So the first time I got paid to be a critic, by the way, doing the reviews on the AM, the AM show became the most popular item in the show, and I'm not getting paid for them, and John McMahon doesn't want me to do them. The other thing I started to do was to take open phone calls, which he didn't want me to do because people, he said, in L.A. are too dumb to take a phone call. And I argued that, listen, often the audience would ask a better question than the host. And we can see that more evident today because there are no hosts intelligent enough or brave enough to ask the right questions anymore. So when a guy named Bert Prelutsky, who was the film critic at L.A. Magazine, left, he recommended that I replace him. And Bert went on to write a column at the L.A. Times and recommended that they also hire me to write a column. because they had one of the funniest sports writers there, and they thought that I would be a really funny writer.
Jim Murray.
Yeah, Jim Murray. But in any of it, he wrote the funniest one-line review I ever read. It was about Dick Van Dyke and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. He said it starts out with a bang and ends up chitty. So you can't beat a review like that. So no. It blossomed. I mean, out of those reviews, look at my best lady friend in the business became Lucille Ball. She and her husband used to fight over getting the reviews. So anyway, I would like to get to some of them. And I want Carol to talk about maybe one or two of her favorite ones. She asked me a really brilliant question, a lot of brilliant questions. What was the toughest review I had to write? Go ahead, Carol.
Well, this book, I think it's been like, what, 2 or 3 years now. So I'm trying to, you know, remember a lot of these things. But I like some of the chapter titles. Let me share some of those. One's called Raising the Hackles. And yeah. So I put in some reviews that rose the hackles, and he even got a response from Burt Reynolds for Raising the Hackles. Then another one, I wrote movies I didn't see but wish I had. And another one, movies I didn't see and glad I hadn't. And these are all like reviews that John gave that I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't see that movie, but I guess, you know, that's quite okay. I think the one, I can find it, and I don't want to take up air time.
You mentioned that you had quite a religious childhood.
Right. Well, yes and no. There was a period of time, I tell people, I came to the Lord like in 1973, and I came to my senses a few years later. So,
okay. Yeah. And I think one of the reviews that you liked the most was a review I did of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah. I have that open right now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Here's what I want you. Hang on a second. You're going to read it. I'm not going to read it. You're going to read it. I'm going to tell Jeff this. Jeff, I never ever took a note when I went to see a movie, and often I'd see it 3 months in advance, and I'd be all by myself in the studio or in the producer's projection office or something like that. Right. And then one of the questions that Carol asked me was, do I review a movie with my heart or with my head? And I said, no, I review it with my ass. And if my ass moves, I use my head to tell me what my ass is trying to tell me. And that becomes the review. But I never, ever made a note. Now, I saw Jesus Christ Superstar. And I'm one of these people who can only work on a deadline. And if I don't have a deadline, I don't write. So it was about an hour before, an hour and a half, I'm going on with Tom Snyder at 6 o'clock for Jesus Christ Superstar. And I just couldn't think of anything to say. I did not like the movie, but I just didn't want to say it in an ordinary way. And then it struck me. I should write this, since it's about the Bible, I should sort of write it sort of biblical. So, Carol, I would like you to read that review. Jesus Christ.
And I think it's interesting that Norman Jewison, who just died, was the director.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. So there's a caption under the picture, because there is a picture of Jesus Christ Superstar from the movie. And it said, and so Jewison brought forth 4 tanks, 2 jets, 1 machine, everything but a partridge in a pear tree. And then here's the review. In the beginning, there was the play, Jesus Christ Superstar. It was full of wonderful music and vitality, and Universal Pictures looked out over the profits it maketh and said, that is good. Let there be a movie. But the movie was without a director. And so Universal looked over Fiddler on the Roof and the profits it maketh and said, that is good. Let Norman Jewison be the director. And so it was. But the movie was without a writer. So Jewison said, let me be one of the writers. And so he made himself a writer, and lo, the movie was still without a writer. And the director-writer was without ideas, and lo, he looked again upon Fiddler and said, I have an idea. I will go on location to the Holy Land and do Fiddler on the Mount in the land of the prophets. Prophets being spelled P-R-O-F-I-T-S. It was a bad idea. And so the talented cast was assembled in the wilderness and for 40 days and 40 nights wandered without direction. And when Jewison looked upon the daily rushes, which were without form and void of imagination, verily he said unto himself, what do I do now? And a voice from the darkness, Universal Tower, saith, how about some symbolism? And so Jewison brought forth four tanks, two jets, one machine, everything but a partridge in a pear tree. And the symbolism was obscure. And when Jewison looked again upon the rushes, he said, I have another idea. To keep the audiences awake, let there be decibels. And verily, the beautiful music was made loud noise. Another bad idea. And when Universal Publicity looked upon Jewison's finished work, they said, yea, it is good. Because that's what they are paid to say. But yea, verily, and lo, when the audience looks up Jesus Christ Superstar, it will say, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
See, I don't know how, honestly, I don't know how somebody can just sit down and mentally put that together. That had to come from a very special place within.
Listen, I don't know how it happens either, Jeff. Honest to God, it sometimes is a total mystery to me. And it comes up and I say, oh, my God, that's terrific. Oh, my God. And but then
well, that's why you're still able to honestly laugh at it, because it's genuinely humorous.
Well, right. Again, what would be one of the other most interesting things? There are two things that I love about the book, because she asked me a great question. What was the toughest film you ever had to review? Which, of course, was Deep Throat. And my boss said, you're going to review it. I said, hey, I can't review an X-rated movie on television. And he said, if it's good enough for Jackie Kennedy to go see, you're going to go see that movie and review it. And then the other thing that I absolutely love is that, you know, Jeff, and I know that the worst entertainment show in the world was always the Oscars. They just never know how to put on an entertainment show.
True.
The closest they ever got at one time was, of course, when Bob Hope in the early days used to host it. And he had
the
greatest.
That was the best one. Agreed.
That's it. So after that, they were monumentally boring. So I went into a bar on Formosa Avenue with a recorder. And I sat at the end of the bar, and there were 20 people around watching the Academy Awards, because the Formosa bar was right across from the studios where Frank Sinatra's office was. So they were all show business people. And I recorded all of their comments. At the end of the book, I reprint. I didn't write any of this. I just reprinted what I recorded, and it's hilarious. But I would like to. Would you like to hear what happened with Deep Throat?
Everyone's listening. They're ready.
Do you want to tell that story, Carol?
I'm trying to find it.
Look in our guest section. Look for John and Carol right at the top. Look underneath, and you'll find a link, direct link to her book that she is now looking through. The greatest reviews I've ever read, and it's a knockout.
Well, okay. So basically, the review I put on NBC, I just had to describe that I had been ordered by management to go and see the film because Jackie Kennedy had seen the film.
Yes.
And I didn't know if Jackie Kennedy had a date at the time when she went to see it, but I was sure she didn't go alone. So I'm trying to avoid reviewing the movie, and I'm on camera. So I say that I asked my wife, Sarita, if she would accompany me. She said, hold it, honey. You just cannot review that on television. That's disgusting. I said, I know it's disgusting, but I have to review the experience of being disgusted, okay? So we go down to the Paris Theater. The line is 2 blocks long to get in. And at the ticket counter, they give you a form you have to sign promising that you won't sue them for whatever, you know, profanity or how disgusting it is or whatever. And so you got to fill out the form. And my wife did not want to sign a form. And people started screaming at her. So finally, we got the form signed. We went inside. And I always like to sit in the back, as I told the audience, so they get out early. And thank God I could do that. I said, so we got inside. And it was tough getting in. And it was tough getting up because the floors were so sticky. Oh, my God, Jeff. Oh, my God. The crew just howled because
that's not an exaggeration, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the other thing is we hated touching people's knees. It was so uncomfortable. And so anyway, we didn't stay too long, and it was harder getting out because the floor was getting stickier. So that was my review on the air. And people loved it, but in print, I put a closing line to cap the review and why my wife and I left so early.
Uh-huh.
So in any event, I get a call from a film owner in Orange County, the most conservative county in California, and a theater owner who aired Deep Throat was being charged with obscenity. And he was trying to defend himself. His lawyer was trying to defend himself on the First Amendment being free speech, which was the same thing that Lenny Bruce was always trying to defend himself was free speech. But they were anxious to bury and kill Lenny, which they did, regardless of the First Amendment. And they were determined to get this exhibitor in Orange County because of the disgusting film. Anyway, I got a call from the lawyer. He read the review in LA Magazine. He said, well, I can understand why you couldn't say it on the air, Mr. Barber, but if I gave you $500, would you come down here as a witness for us? And I said, well, you're fighting the case on free speech, I presume. He said, yes, but there's a whole lot more to it than that. So would you come down if I give you $500? I said, you don't have to pay me nickel. I will just come down there. So I go down there, Jeff, and the courtroom is absolutely packed. It's right. Packed because it's about Deep Throat. And it's packed, I hate to say this, because they advertised the fact that Johnny Barber was coming down from NBC as a witness for the exhibitor.
Okay. Oh, that would pack the courtroom, for sure.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm on the stand, and the lawyer's really smart. He says, Mr. Barber, could you tell us a little bit about your background? So I tell about how poor I was, born in the Salvation Army in a hospital in Toronto, and my father deserting us, and my coming down here. Did you have an easy time coming to the country? No. Why was that? And then talk about being deported, but I loved America so much I came back to get deported again. And the audience started to applaud and laugh. I didn't say anything funny. And then he said, and did you finally become a citizen? I said, yes. He said, what were the circumstances? And I said, well, it was in 1977, and Senator John Tunney, right here in California, gave me my citizenship papers. And Cheryl sang the national anthem for me. Now the court really laughed, okay? So he said, now, how well did you become a critic by accident? And I said, yes, all the great things in life happen by accident, okay? It's only an accident that you called me here, isn't it? He said, no, it's deliberate, and we'll get to that soon, Mr. Barber. So he said, you're well-respected in your business? And I said, I guess so. He said, well, don't they give Emmys for what you do? And I said, yes. He said, how many you got? I told him I got 5. He said, just for entertainment or news or what? And I said, both. Oh, very impressive. I think you're the only one in that business who's done that. Yes, yes. Now the audience really likes me. Okay, this lawyer is really smart. He said, okay, now you went to see Deep Throat. I said, yes. He said, why did you go to see it? Did you enjoy going to see pornography? Did you think the audience would be interested? I said, no, I can't stand pornography because it's not a love story. And then the audience sort of sighed. And I said I was ordered to go by management because Jackie Onassis went to see it. Now the audience is really gay. He said, yeah. So now you reviewed it on the air. Yes, yes. And I said, and then he said, but that's not the review you put in Los Angeles Magazine. And I said, well, some of it, I reviewed the uncomfortable experience. And he said, well, how do you mean uncomfortable? Well, touching people and having a sticky floor. Oh, bah. Now the audience is chuckling. He says, okay, now, you left early. Why did you leave early? And I didn't say anything. He said, Mr. Barber, what was it that you wrote in the magazine to your audience that said why you left early? And I said, I don't talk like that. And the judge said to me, Mr. Barber, I've been on the bench here for 27 years. I have heard the foulest things in the world. There is nothing that you can say to me or this court that would upset anybody. And I said, but Your Honor, it would upset me. I don't do this. I don't even say anything nasty in my act when I was a comic. He said, well, you're going to have to answer the lawyer's question. So please answer the question. And I didn't answer it. And I said to the lawyer, could you ask it again? He said, what was the closing line of your review to explain why you left? And I said, well, my wife and I, oh my God.
Take your time.
Okay. Oh God. My wife and I left. That's exactly what the judge said. Take your time. And that's exactly, I'm reliving it as I say this. My wife and I left after the first 15 inches. Oh my God. the place exploded. My God, there were people falling on the floor and pounding, and the judge fell down. Oh, everybody was, and the judge started banging the gavel, and he screamed out, case dismissed.
It sounds like a Frank Capra comedy. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. And then the judge says to me.
Incredible.
He says, Mr. Barber, I'm going to tell you something. In those 27 years, anytime the jury laughed, it was always an acquittal. Congratulations. So anyway.
Too funny. Oh, too funny.
Yeah.
That is a priceless truth. Not exaggerating a bit. If we had video of that, it would still be being played today.
Well,
cameras in the courtroom.
Do you remember, Carol, my review of the Sunshine Boys?
Matthau and Lemon. Walter Matthau and Jack Lemon.
Tell Jeff a little bit about my review of the Sunshine Boys.
Oh, by the way, let me say, I too, John and Carol, walked out of Deep Throat. It was so foul. But I hate to say this as an admission. One line in that movie, one scripted line, is still stuck in my head. And I'm wondering if you remember it too. And it was, the woman looks at the guy, and the guy's paying his respects, so to speak. And she says, "Do you mind if I smoke while you eat?"
I did not get that far.
Well, that did it for me. I that was it, and I walked.
Oh, oh God!
Funny.
Somebody asked me once if I smoked after sex, and I said I never looked.
Yeah, I never. I think Red Fox stole that joke from you. That's a funny one.
Oh God! Yeah. Okay. Do you remember? What was it? The Sunshine Boys, Angel. Do you remember?
Yeah, I have it opened here. You start. Neil Simon has written almost as many successful plays as Harris and Frank have suits. When they are taken off the stage and put on the screen, though, they don't look as good. And the fault is Simon's. The best characters in his plays reflect an ethnic New York Jewish background. And he has captured the distinctive humor and honest of such a background so effectively and entertainingly, he has become one of the world's wealthiest playwrights. But something goes wrong when he moves his characters cross-country to Hollywood. And it's a pretty long review. I won't read it all, but the very last paragraph, Neil Simon's plays prove he is an excellent writer. What his movies show, though, is that he is not much of a rewriter or a casting director. I mean, you know, you don't hold back.
And then I think the last line of the review, the second last line, is the next thing he should write is a letter to himself, firing himself as a casting director. If Shakespeare got residuals, he still wouldn't be as rich as Neil Simon. I say that in the review. So Neil Simon didn't need a studio to finance his film. And if Neil believed in, you know, because Albertson and Levine were the perfect Jews to play the perfect Jewish comedians. And Matthau and Burns were just god-awful. It was Walter Matthau's worst performance ever in a film. And usually he's gold in a film. And the same with
Burns. George Burns. Yeah, I said earlier, Jack Lemmon, my mistake. But you're right. You're right. That was a very flat performance by Matthau. I didn't care for it. I remember.
Guess what? When the review was over, I get a phone call from Neil Simon. And he's laughing and laughing and laughing. Mm-hmm. He said, "Oh, my God." He said, "Who speaks like that to the crowd of Hollywood?" And the same thing happened with Burt Reynolds. I think I've told you this story a dozen times. But when I bombed White Lightning and I had a Saturday night show called the 19-Inch Variety Show, and I gave Brian Gumbel his first job as a co-host on that show, after I bombed White Lightning, and it's a Friday, in my review, the phone was ringing, and it's Burt Reynolds. He says, "What time do I need to be there?" He didn't even identify himself. And I said, "For what?" He said, "I'm going to be a guest on that damn show of yours tomorrow night." And I said, "We're booked." He says, "You're damn right you're booked, and I'm the lead booker, okay?" And he hung up. So he just shows up. And, of course,
he told
his family, his adopted sons, the greatest 12 minutes he ever spent on television talking to anybody. And you go to my YouTube channel and Google that, you have the most adorable time. But what happened when I was doing my second album called I Met a Man I Didn't Like, and it's all based, Jeff, on all of my movie reviews, the things that I'm talking about to you now, they are in an album called I Met a Man I Didn't Like. And Neil Simon called and said, "Hey, I'm doing the liner notes for you." So I said, "Well, Burt Reynolds wanted to." And he said, "Well, screw Burt, put me on top." So it's Burt Reynolds, second to Neil Simon. Then it's Paul Williams, and then it's oh my god, who's that funny Jewish girl writer we talked about last show? Jewish comic. God, you know who I'm talking
Cheryl,
about.
Oh, Cheryl Leifer.
No. Oh my god, Joan Rivers. Joni. Okay, so the four of them did the review. And 6 months later, I get a call from Neil. And he says, John, you want to know something? I just love your album. But that was the least successful writing I ever did. Because it didn't sell that much. So anyway, but every time he was on it. What, dear?
John, I think the viewers need to know, or the listeners need to know, that in the book, you shared the letter from Burt Reynolds. They can see the letter. We made a copy of the letter that Burt had written you. And then also we made a copy of your response. So your letters back and forth are in the book so people can read the exchange.
Oh, my God. Yes, that's right. You know, and Burt said that I was the only critic that he ever wrote to. And we had this back and forth correspondence. And thank you, Carol, for reminding me. We included it in the book. Jeff, how much time do we have?
About 2 minutes.
Oh, you wouldn't have time. You know what? Can Carol and I come back at another time?
You know what? Hold on. Let me think this through. I'm wondering if we should just go ahead and do another hour right now. I think I can make that happen.
I've got to say, I won't be able to do it.
Okay.
An hour
right,
right now.
Well, we'll have you back. You'll
okay.
come back.
Okay. Thank you. Because
we'll set this up.
Oh my God! There's so many things that here are so hilarious. But the thing about the Academy Awards, when I am quoting real people commenting on what's going on the screen, I myself fell down laughing because I didn't write it. I just recorded it. And it is really, really funny. So anyway.
Right.
Carol, I have a request. Will you nudge Johnny? He's still got almost 400 pages of material that was not included in the book that you edited. Your mother's not a virgin. And we need to have a sequel. We've got to get this second book out.
Oh,
he can
I agree.
Enhance it. He's got many more stories he can add. And if you will just help me, I've been pushing him for a long time since the first book and before that.
To the choir here. I've told
Very
him the
good.
Same thing. Yep. I told him the book even that he has now, like his early life, I just find so fascinating. The whole book is just it's just so entertaining. It could be on this big screen. I keep thinking this should be a movie.
Your next editing job is waiting for you.
Okay. Well, my son keeps urging me to do this same thing. So I just want to leave folks with this thought about Nevada with all these politicians showing up in this 2024 next presidential election. If the ballot in Nevada reads for president, Joe Biden, Democrat, Donald Trump, Republican, or none of the above, our next president will be none of the above.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Carol, it's really been fun. Thank you. It's nice to meet you. We'll have you back again. We'll set this up when you're both ready. We'll do another hour.
Great. Great.
All right.
And this
thank
way,
you so much.
I'll know ahead of time what to look up in the book, so I'm prepared.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay,
thanks
John.
So much. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Carol.
Good night.
Bye.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Okay, John. Was that your good night?
Yeah. I just love being here with you, Jeff.
It's always a pleasure, and it's more than that. I don't have words for it. It's so special. And everybody out there who has a heart and a soul and a sense of humor, I thoroughly would love to give you a hug and shake your hand for all the wonders you've given them. And I mean that. So.
Oh, you know, we don't. Oh, hang on a second. Oh, we don't have time to read it. Okay. Well,
you're out.
No, we don't. I had 5,000 friends on Facebook, and I got to tell you next time how I got rid of them, okay?
Very good. Okay. All right, my friend. Talk soon. Okay. Be well. Bye-bye. Give Sarita a hug. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Amazing. Kind of leaves me just sitting here wanting a whole lot more. All right, we'll be right back with hour number two for you next.